This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Cowboys dominant. On the day that Dak Prescott signs the biggest deal in the history of the NFL, welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. 33-17, it didn't even feel that close. I mean, Dallas really took Cleveland to the woodshed here. And, you know, I'd like to say that the offense really was the story for Dallas. I actually think the defense was more the story. Mike Zimmer's defense looked great. They sacked Deshaun Watson six times. Now Cleveland was missing both of their tackles. And Watson threw two interceptions. He held on to the ball. He had bad throws. And according to Micah Parsons after the game, Perloff, defensively, he said, quote, "We didn't even open up our full bag." Ooh. The run defense allowed three rushers to combine for 93 yards. And versus pressure, Deshaun Watson was 5 of 17 for 22 yards. I mean, it was defensively, they really stymied Cleveland.
Yeah, they had pressure on 44% of Deshaun Watson's dropbacks. You know, they got this guy, Marshawn Nealon, in the draft, and then Demarion Overshawn, who was hurt last year, who's basically a rookie. And obviously, Deron Bland is out, and this kid, Kalen Carson, comes in and does fine, who's a fifth-round pick at corner. They are on a bit of a hot streak drafting. So that makes me kind of nervous about them as an Eagles fan. Like, wow, they look really good. Maybe, but it's hard to tell in week one. Is this a function of Deshaun Watson specifically being bad?
If you're a Cleveland, if you're a Browns fan, I saw a little of this on social media yesterday, but you've got to be feeling so helpless. And this is a team that cycled through quarterbacks for years and years. It became a joke, Pearl, to list all the terrible quarterbacks that the Browns have had. And meanwhile, you're watching Baker Mayfield go light it up yesterday. Granted, they're playing against the Commanders. I don't know how good the Commanders are going to be, but Baker Mayfield throws four touchdowns in that game. He looks great. He's got all these weapons. You paid all this money to get Deshaun Watson in this big sweepstakes where, you know, you're trying to get what we thought was a great quarterback, and he's just dreadful. Because here's the thing about missing both of your tackles. We watched Matthew Stafford last night. The Rams lost in overtime to the Detroit Lions. They have issues all over their offensive line. Stafford's still able to find his receivers. That's when you pay a guy this much money or you think that he's going to be this good of a quarterback, you have to think he can overcome certain things. Now, not everything, not all stuff, but he can't overcome anything. Watson is just a disaster. And it's only going to get worse because the pressure's only going to build and mount on the coaching staff, on the front office, and everything.
I'll just say that he needs a lot of reps there so that it can get better. I mean, it can't get worse.
It could get worse. He could get hurt again.
Well, I'm just saying it can definitely get better. I mean, that's a low bar to get better. One thing about Watson, I will say, he moved pretty good. Unfortunately, he was moving a lot.
Backwards.
Yeah, but he was running around a little bit, and you actually saw... Like people are asking what happened to Houston Deshaun Watson. Like he did look like he had his legs underneath him, which is something that we haven't seen necessarily. It will get better. And again, that is not a huge compliment.
No, it's not. I mean, I guess bottom sort of right now. My only worry about this is, and again, we're giving credit here to the Dallas defense who looked really good yesterday, but Deshaun Watson looked bad. And I feel like it's his shoulder might be a ticking time bomb.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Jameis is going to play this year. There's no doubt about that.
He will.
It's interesting because I wasn't willing to hold off on Will Levis, but I do think that you have to give some guys a semi-pass on week one. I don't think that the ceiling has come down so much on Deshaun Watson. No one expects him to be the all-star he was in Houston. But can he be at least mediocre and let the defense win? And you look skeptical of even that.
Very skeptical. Extremely skeptical. Yeah. And especially because, you know, Myles Garrett is always a factor, but not so much yesterday, right? And it's...
Well, I don't know. He did blow Guyton away a couple times.
Right, but it's like this vaunted Cleveland defense. I don't know.
I mean, Dallas was...
moving the ball.
Dallas, yeah, but Dallas was not going back with deep drops and looking down the field that much.
That is true. 855-212-4227. What I want to know is all the people and the Cowboy fans who jumped off the bandwagon, are you back in after what you saw week one?
You know the answer to that.
What do you think the ceiling is for the Cowboys?
Well, everyone's back in. I mean, they couldn't have had a better week.
I'd be back in.
They signed CeeDee Lamb, and they signed Dak Prescott, and they won their first game convincingly. So I think the Cowboys fans have some amnesia about what happened last year in the playoffs.
See, but I was under the impression that a lot of Cowboys fans didn't want Dak back anyway.
It seemed to change. Oh, I think what happened over the offseason, and maybe this is the least way I viewed it, quarterbacks around the league got so expensive. Tua signed for $200, Jordan Love signed for $200, Trevor signed, that I think Cowboys fans had to be realistic, saying, oh gosh, there's not going to be a market. Stafford may or may not be available next year. So I think the Cowboys had to look at the market and say, yeah, we're better off with Dak because everybody else is getting paid.
855-212-4227. All right, that's a little what's going on with the Cowboys. They're the headliner, Tom Brady's debut.
Not exactly
what we were expecting from the greatest quarterback of all time. Not that insightful, turns out. Maybe he'll get better, and maybe we'll get some real gems, but we did not get that yesterday. He basically just said the same thing over and over again, that it's very hard to get first downs when you're at first and 20.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom. Goated.
Yeah.
Appreciate you.
He's like, Mike Zimmer's looks are very challenging for the quarterback. Yeah. I'm like, you
we
mean
were picking up on
his
that.
Defensive looks, just yeah. so we know. Mike Zimmer, fine-looking man.
Yeah. A real 10. Let's get to the NFL in 60.
Maggie and Perloff take you around the league, recapping this weekend's football action. Time for NFL in 60.
1 minute for every game that we saw yesterday, Perloff. Let's kick it off with that Pittsburgh-Atlanta game. Pittsburgh 18, Atlanta 10. Atlanta had to go to the silent count because the Steeler fans had invaded the stadium. Justin Fields gets a start. I don't think he did enough to hold on to the job, though. They did not score an offensive touchdown. I think you'll see Russell Wilson week two.
Yeah, who cares? TJ Watt's going to single-handedly win that game. Not only did he destroy everybody, the way he did it, he's so charismatic now. He, like, his arms are flailing when he's rushing the pass like a Tasmanian devil. I'm telling you, MVP watch. Like, real big MVP.
Meanwhile, Kirk Cousins, turns out this might be just a fundamentally flawed thing in Atlanta where you have all these skill position players, but you're not able to do anything on offense. And Cousins clearly still working his way back from the Achilles. We were just talking to Andrew Bogish in the break about how much he was in shotgun. Not going to be under center. The mobility was never really there for Kirk. And now, not much. So, there you go. Are we getting a buzzer or something?
Yeah.
There we go.
All right.
There we go. That's good. Let's move on. My Buffalo Bills get a win at home, 34-28 over the Arizona Cardinals. Perloff, let's just call it what it is. Buffalo should not have won that game. There should have been a defensive penalty called on the final play that should have put Arizona at the goal line with a first and goal with under a minute left to go. They would have punched it in, and they should have left Buffalo with a win. They didn't get the call.
Can we just talk about it from a fantasy football perspective?
Sure.
Josh Allen's going to pull a Cam Newton 2015. Is he going to hand the ball off in the red zone at all, or is he like, I'm getting every touchdown?
He might, and I don't know what it's going to cost him.
It cost him his wrist.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, is this just this bordering on stupid? Like, dude, you're in a close game with Arizona at home. You're going to probably win the game. Like, you can do some other things in the red zone besides carry the ball and dive.
I don't know if they were probably winning anything. They needed Josh Allen to
be a hero. They outscored him at 28-3 during one stretch. Honestly.
Yeah, but then they let him back in the game with
because
the DJ
of a kick
Dallas.
Return. A kick return. That nobody else even came close to a dynamic kick return touchdown.
Meanwhile, not much from Marvin Harrison Jr. One catch on four targets. Let's move on. Bears get a win improbably, 24-17. Will Levis, horrible decision-making as he's going to the ground, decides to throw it right into the arms of a Bears defensive player who had a pick six. It was 17-16 Titans with 8 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter, and they just gave the game away.
I mean, Will Levis, forget it. I just do not see it happening. They pay Calvin Ridley all this money. They pay Nuke Hopkins all this money. Those guys did nothing because either there was no protection or Will Levis just doesn't know how to throw the ball downfield. This is a mess. They need a quarterback. On the other side of the ball, the Bears defense looked pretty salty. I think Matt Eberflus's haircut did well. Caleb Williams, You really, like, you cannot drop him back too many times. He's just not ready to go.
14 for 29 for 93 yards, Caleb Williams.
Again, just like I said earlier in the segment, like, can't get worse. Well, maybe it can. He didn't throw any picks.
Don't know about that. Let's move on. The upset of the day. The New England Patriots go into Cincinnati. They win 16-10. They knock the entire country out of all of their survivor pools, including me. Jamar Chase, who's been in a prolonged contract situation on hold-out, hold-in with the team, allegedly had food poisoning that he was dealing with on Saturday night. He had six catches for 62 yards. This probably should have... Listen, the Bengals played bad, but that Gesicki touchdown that gets wiped out in the end zone, that looked like a touchdown to me. On the very next play, player gets stripped for a turnover. Mm-hmm. They gave up a lot of yards on the ground. The Cincinnati defense couldn't tackle. New England got 11 first downs via the rush, Perloff.
So last year, in the same spot, the Bengals lost 24-3 to the Browns in week one. They don't like week one. Last year, Joe Burrow threw 82 yards in week one. This year, he's done better than that. The Bengals just mail in these early games. They don't care. Or they don't play in preseason or something. Anyway, I'm not alarmed. I'm not sounding the alarm. T. Higgins will be back eventually. Chase will end his holdout. It's fine.
Let's move on. Houston gets a win over Indianapolis, 29-27. Stephon Diggs, great debut for Houston. Two touchdowns. Joe Mixon, also a good debut, 159 yards and a touchdown. C.J. Stroud, no turnovers. I actually thought the story of this game was Anthony Richardson's arm. I know they lost the game, but man, is this dude the most exciting quarterback to watch in the NFL outside of Mahomes?
Yeah, I mean, when it works. I mean, he only had 9 completions on the day, but when it works, it's amazing. And even the misses are exciting. He does overthrow guys sometimes. Of course he does. He's got the strongest arm I've ever seen.
He's got two touchdown passes of 50-plus yards in this game and a touchdown run.
This is actually a big game because I think these, you know, the Texans' biggest threat might be the Colts. That being said, Joe Mixon. If Joe Mixon plays like this, then we definitely have to put the Texans as Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, I was surprised that the score was that it was as close, and it was close throughout the entire game, especially because Houston, time of possession, they held the ball for 40 minutes in this game.
Yeah, I mean, they were up 29-20 at the end. It didn't really get too scary for them.
Dolphins 20, Jags 17, a day that started with Tyreek Hill and Calais Campbell both in handcuffs. Tyreek Hill taken to the ground by a police officer because of a driving incident that happened in the shadow of the stadium. He was detained. So that was basically the headliner here. How the game actually went was a terrible Travis Etienne fumble basically at the goal line that set up a Jason Sanders 52-yard field goal to win the game.
I think it's a big moment for the Jaguars. Like, how does Travis Etienne respond to this? I know I know you could see by his face he cost them the game. How does Trevor Lawrence? How does Doug Peterson? Like, it's now or never for the Jags.
We had a caller earlier in the show say Trevor Lawrence has not gotten better under Press Taylor. The offensive coordinator, Doug Peterson, I don't even know who's calling the plays. It's always back and forth between those two guys. I don't know if Lawrence has gotten better, but Brian Thomas Jr. is a dude. Wide receiver from LSU, and their first-round pick looks awesome.
Yeah, they should have come out of this game 1-0. This is, and again, that division's tough, so they can't mess it up.
Let's move on. This is the Maggie and Perloff NFL in 60, 1 minute on every game. The shocker of the day, just because of the score. New Orleans 47, Carolina 10. New Orleans scored on their first 9 possessions, Perloff, and it was a banner day for Derek Carr. 19 for 23, 3 touchdowns. This Clint Kubiak offense looking spry.
Yeah. Can we talk about Taysom Hill has not lost a step. I think, guess how old Taysom Hill is? The New Orleans tight end or whatever. He's 50. 34. Oh. He's 34. He still runs a 4.5. He's the biggest freak the NFL has ever had. It doesn't make any sense as a player whatsoever. I was, of course, blown away by the Saints, but does this mean anything? The Panthers might be that bad, Maggie.
The Panthers are awful. They had 11 first downs the entire game. 2 came from penalties. They had 58 rushing yards as a team. And Bryce Young, just woof, 13 for 30, 161 yards, no touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Granted, they're trailing the entire game. I mean, he didn't have a prayer in this one. And
he
it
ran
could be
in
a long season.
He ran in a touchdown and almost fumbled it out of the back of the end zone. He looks so nervous and shaken by the pass rush. Terrible.
Speaking of bad teams, the Giants lose to Minnesota 28-6 at home. fans of the New York Giants stuck around after the game specifically to boo Daniel Jones as he's heading to his car. I mean, even for New York, that's really bad. 42 pass attempts for Daniel Jones, only 186 yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions. Meanwhile, Sam Darnold used to play in that very stadium when he was a member of the Jets. This one went way better, 19 for 24, two touchdowns. He did have an interception. He completed his first 12 passes, Pearl.
Yeah, he looked great. Seems to have a connection with Justin Jefferson. I'm excited for him to be mediocre, and that is way above your expectations.
Right.
Kevin O'Connell is a pretty good offensive coach. Now, the Giants, like, I'm okay with this. Rock bottom. I feel like, remember the Sixers and the process? They're processing right now. They're going to start all over again if it keeps up like this.
Yeah, not on purpose. They paid Daniel Jones $40 million.
Well, they already are in the world of regret about that. I think they've given up on him.
As for Minnesota, we'll see what happens when they host San Francisco next week. Okay, let's go to the Chargers and the Raiders. Jim Harbaugh's debut is a winner. Chargers win 22-10. This was really the J.K. Dobbins show. 135 rushing yards on 10 carries. He had a 46-yard run and a 61-yard run midway through the fourth quarter when it was a one-score game. Antonio Pierce getting a ton of criticism today, punting on 4th-and-1 at the Chargers 43 when you're trailing by 6 with 7 minutes to play, Pearl.
What's the difference? The Raiders' offense was so non-threatening the entire game. There were a few passes from Minshew to Adams that looked good, but I have no idea what the Raiders are doing. Do you know? What's the plan?
I don't know what the plan is. The Chargers' defense had 3 takeaways. Meanwhile, Tyree Wilson, the first-round draft pick from 2 years ago, hurt his left knee. And by the way, the Raiders have to go to Baltimore next week. So good luck with all that.
Chargers never pass the ball, but Ladd McConkey with a nice little nifty move at the end zone. I like that.
I did see that. And I got to hand it to you. You said Justin Herbert was going to kind of be the afterthought here to the run game. And you were right.
Oh, which is exactly how Harbaugh wants it.
Seattle 26, Denver 20. Kenneth Walker, 84 of his 103 rushing yards came in the second half. This was really, Seattle just like looked awful in the first half and then really started to clean things up in the second half. Bo Nix had 42 pass attempts in his debut, 138 yards, two interceptions, no touchdown, although did have a rushing touchdown. Denver got 2 safeties in the second quarter. This is a weird game. And Bo Nix was... A little shaky, but you get the sense that Sean Payton's really holding his hand through this thing.
Yeah, very shaky. There was a position where it looked like they might get a third safety because they had the Seahawks pinned. That would have been awesome. Honestly, this game put the sport of NFL football back about 30 years. It was awful. Although I did like Geno had a sweet run. So I'm all about Geno Smith. I'm all about these sort of middle-aged journeyman quarterbacks showing up and showing out.
Journeyman quarterbacks had a really big day yesterday. Okay, we mentioned before, Dallas 33, Cleveland 17. Didn't feel that close. For Cleveland, Deshaun was just bad. He was sacked 6 times, missing both of his tackles, threw the 2 picks. He was holding on to the ball. Dallas said they were just playing some kind of vanilla defense, and that was enough to completely flummox Cleveland.
Yeah, for me, the big issue with the Cowboys, will they be able to stop the run, and can they run the ball at all with Ezekiel Elliott? They definitely stopped the run, so that's a nice sign. We'll see if that keeps up against better teams. And then, it's funny. I thought Elliott looked okay. I had very low expectations for him. You know, he looked kind of... How do I say this? Chunky in the preseason, but he didn't play that way at all.
Also, how do you not give him his old number back?
That was weird, right?
15? So odd. Meanwhile, David Njoku left with an ankle injury, so that's just something to keep an eye on for Cleveland. We're motoring along here. 2 games left. The Bucks, big win over Washington, 37-20. Baker Mayfield throws 4 touchdowns in this game. But let's talk about the Jaden Daniels side of things, Pearl. 8 first downs on his legs, had a rushing touchdown, big RPO game, which is basically what you'd expect with Cliff Kingsbury. Mm-hmm. How did you think Jaden Daniels did?
I thought he looked good. Now, there was some near misses. He had overthrew McLaurin in what should have been a touchdown. He hit that play at LSU, so I know he can do it. Could not get the offense organized at all. They had to use all these timeouts, so that was a problem. And then it was, for some reason, the officials wanted to call every little block downfield a penalty, so they could have scored a lot more than 20 points. I think of the rookies, he was the most promising to me.
He definitely had the best day, but the bar is not that high because Caleb was not good, and we said Bo Nix looked shaky, but that somewhat promising. We do have one more quickly. It was overtime, Rams and the Lions. Cue up the music again. Lions
win this
one.
Well, you have to take a break between the 4 o'clock games and the 7 o'clock games.
26-20. Listen, Lions, I guess, stay true to the identity, although I was a little surprised that Amon-Ra St. Brown and Sam Laporta weren't a little bit more involved in the offense here. It kind of came down to whoever got the ball in overtime.
Yep.
The other team was just so tired, they couldn't stop whoever it was. And I think Matthew Stafford showed a lot of people what he's known for, the calling card, which is the arm strength, of course, but the grit.
Yeah, it's amazing. Cooper Kupp is back. That he had a catch on the sideline where somehow, in a full sprint, he got both toes down. I don't even know how he did it. He looks like MVP form Cooper, or actually Offensive Player of the Year form Cooper Kupp. Detroit is going to run the ball a lot. I mean, with Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs, you could probably do a lot of damage that way. Goff threw the dumbest interception at the end of the game. Everybody was leading on Sunday. Everybody just kept on making dumb plays and giving away leads. I think there were 4 games where teams blew 14-point leads. The Lions got lucky to not cost them the game.
Coming up, we are going to take ourselves to the Bay Area. We're going to check in before Aaron Rodgers faces the San Francisco 49ers tonight. Get a little boots on the ground reporting of what's going on before this Monday Night Football special. It's Maggie and Perloff. Don't move.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff. So much going on. We almost forgot, Maggie. Kind of the game of the week is tonight.
Yep.
I cannot wait to see what happens to this Jets-Niners game. Actually, it was the Niners who had all the drama in the offseason, but Aaron Rodgers is back.
A little bit of a role reversal. Usually we're talking about all this weird stuff that happens with the Jets, but no, this time it was the 49ers who were full of drama. You're so right. Zach Rosenblatt is joining us from the Bay Area. He covers the Jets for The Athletic. Zach, thanks so much for getting up early for us. If you want to watch this, youtube.com/InfinitySportsNet. That looks like a Marriott, maybe a Hyatt. Thanks for doing it, pal. Okay, so you wrote this big piece about Aaron Rodgers that's dropped right now that's on The Athletic website, and it's about Rodgers being this very polarizing figure nationally, but in his hometown of Chico, California, which is about 3 hours from San Francisco, he is a hero. Explain why.
Yeah, you know, I flew to Chico kind of because of that. You know, he obviously is such a polarizing figure, and there's people who really despise him who aren't like Jets or Packers fans. So I wanted to go to his hometown and see what they felt about him. And, you know, I went and talked to a lot of people, and, you know, he's donated like millions of dollars to help with the forest fires. He's helped his high school in so many ways over the years, you know, buying them equipment, getting them transportation to, you know, their championship runs. And he, during COVID, he like basically saved like over 160 businesses, something like that. So, you know, he's a complicated figure, like, and I get why people don't like him, but I also think it is important to like peel back the curtain sometimes and show like, you know, who these people are from where and how people feel about them, where they're from.
Zach, you're just making him more confusing. Like I would say to Maggie in the break, like, God, I don't remember. Am I supposed to like or dislike Aaron Rodgers? Because I was watching this weekend, he had this incredibly charming interview with Alex Smith where they both had this heartfelt conversation about recovery. But then you remember, oh, man, he can be really abrasive at times. So I don't know. Do you like Aaron Rodgers?
I don't know if I like or dislike him. I think he's a complicated figure. Like, I don't agree with a lot of things he says, certainly, but I don't think anybody should be necessarily defined by like their opinions. And I know he's had some, you know, troubling ones and all that. Like it's a complicated conversation, but I do think it is important to, if you want to highlight the bad stuff, highlighting the good stuff is also, you know, I think part of the story.
Interesting. You don't define him by his opinions. What do you define him by?
That's a fair question.
His actions.
His actions. Yeah. His actions, you know. Yeah, I think that's the right answer, honestly, the things he does. I mean, it's a combo of both. You define him by his opinions and his actions, frankly. So that's why he's so complicated.
Zach Rosenblatt's joining us. He covers the Jets for The Athletic. Big game tonight, of course. I think we're all holding our breath to see how Rodgers is going to hold up physically. You know, Zach, you've been around this team all throughout the preseason. What have you seen from Rodgers in terms of his Achilles and how he's looking?
I mean, he's looked really good. You know, He looked like he did last summer. You know, in practice, he's always going to be a star, I think, because he's such an accurate thrower of the football. And when he knows he can't get hit, he's going to do a lot of things that most people can't do. So my biggest question this whole time is like, I expect him to look as good as he did. He looked pretty good moving from what I could tell. But how is he going to look when, you know, the bullets are actually flying, when guys are coming to take his head off? When he takes that first hit, does he get back up? Is he hesitant to run? Like all these things, like we don't know until we see it. So, you know, he's 40 coming off an Achilles. Like these are all things that indicate he would, you know, be slower and hits would be harder to come up from. So that's the thing I have my eye on most to start this game tonight, because you just don't know how he's going to, like, he can say he's not worried about it and the team can say they're not worried about it. But I think it's fair to be concerned about how he's going to come up from that first hit from Nick Bosa or whoever mm-hmm. it is.
Zach, what's your sense of this game in particular? I imagine that they've circled this on the calendar forever. It's, you know, Rodgers grew up a 49ers fan, and the Jets feels like they're chomping at the bit to get their full team out there. Does this game mean something special to the Jets? Obviously, every game does, but it feels like they're going to be raring to go.
Yeah, there's so many storylines here. You know, you have the Rodgers thing, obviously, and him being from the Bay Area, and Robert Saleh was in San Francisco for so long. Jeff Ulbrich was a longtime player there, the defensive coordinator. They have a bunch of players on their roster who are with the 49ers. So there's a lot going into this game. And I think the Jets are considered underdogs in this game. And I don't think there's going to be like a lot of games that are necessarily underdogs this year, like when you just look at them talent wise. So I think they are pretty motivated to prove to people that, you know, that's not the same old Jets. Like as Aaron Rodgers said the other day, like if they win, everybody's going to be like, this is a Super Bowl team. And if they lose, everybody's going to be like same old Jets. And so I think they're motivated to get the former more than the latter, because they're kind of tired of that whole narrative, I would say.
Zach Rosenblatt's joining us, senior writer for The Athletic, who covers the Jets. I'm sure no one would say this publicly because they wouldn't want to give the other team bulletin board material. But have you gotten a sense from any of the Jets players, Zach, that some of the 49ers drama from this offseason, whether it's Ayuk's contract, Trent Williams holding out, the very serious situation with Ricky Pearsall, where thankfully he's going to be okay as he was shot as he was robbed in broad daylight for his Rolex watch. You know, and losing the Super Bowl, quite frankly, in overtime in the way they did, has anyone from the Jets even privately said, like, man, maybe we're catching a team that could be still trying to get their feet under them with all these offseason issues that popped up?
Not really. You know, to the Jets' credit this offseason, I think, you know, and you guys probably know this, in past offseasons, they had a tendency to, like, put the cart before the horse. They talk about themselves too much, get a little too excited, think they've accomplished something before they do. This offseason, the tone has really, really changed, where it's really has been very businesslike. As Robert Saleh said, nobody really talks like that. They've really just been focused on the day-to-day and winning right now. So I think they look at the 49ers as a very talented team. They've been planning as if Trent Williams and Ayuk were going to be there the whole time. As you alluded to earlier, the Jets have their own drama usually, so they're not going to blame anybody else for having theirs. And they have their Hassan Reddick thing also, so it's not like they have nothing going on. But I don't see them as looking at the 49ers as vulnerable. I think they view that as a very talented team that they have to come to play against.
Hey, did you notice AFC East went 3-0 on Sunday? It feels like this is all of a sudden going to be a very challenging division. How much confidence do you have in the Jets' chances of winning this division?
You know, that did not go as I expected yesterday, especially with how the game started and the Patriots winning. I do think the Jets have a really good chance, because I really do think this is the most talented team in the division. You know, they have a lot of things that could quickly go wrong and turn the season. Like if Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, if this offensive line doesn't live up to the hype, if any of their young stars get hurt, then all of a sudden you're looking at potential disaster. And, you know, you can question this coaching staff and all that stuff. But I think on paper, this is the most talented team in the division. And if you're the most talented team in the division with a quarterback, like if Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers, they absolutely can win the division. I still think they have to, you know, they have to beat the Bills at the end of the day. I think that's the team that they have their eye on, is what I would say.
Zach Rosenblatt, you can read him on The Athletic. Got a new piece out right now about Aaron Rodgers and his connection to his hometown of Chico, which sounded like a place I would have wanted to party in 1987 when Playboy magazine named Chico State the biggest party school in the country. But this is great. Rodgers helping out all, not only his former high school, but a lot of the businesses who struggled during the pandemic. You know, we say we always only point out things when we criticize these athletes, mm-hmm. but he's doing good in that community. Zach, thanks so much for the time. Enjoy the game tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate that. Zach Rosenblatt from The Athletic.
Man, a lot riding on tonight's game. I mean, because the narrative is going to be set. If it goes badly, then Saleh is already in a hole.
We will make our pick for that game in just a moment, but Andrew Bogish is here with headlines.
And guys, they were up 17-3, then down 20-17, fought their way to overtime with a last-second field goal, and then let David Montgomery get them a win with a one-yard TD run midway through extra time. Lions head coach Dan Campbell loves his veteran running back.
Runs heavy, he's tough, he's physical, he gets in a rhythm, and I think he's a catalyst for us, you know? He starts carrying it, and he gets better and better, and I think the line feeds off of him, and he feeds off of them, and we get what we get. So that guy's a stud.
Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs combining for 131 yards, each scoring once as the Lions down the Rams 26-20 on Sunday Night Football.
I think Dan Campbell's in the early lead for best commercial.
Oh, no way.
I like Case Keenum's commercial.
Oh,
it's
come
great.
On.
Case is in a Progressive commercial as the backup dad who has to come in and park and get the car out of the garage or whatever.
I don't think I've seen that one yet.
You haven't seen the Case Progressive guy?
I think it was the first commercial on Big Noon Saturday on Fox, and I saw it six times. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's good. But I think Dan Campbell, the Applebee's one, it kind of won me over where he's covering his face.
Well, we do have a show disagreement. I'm sorry, I'm such an idiot. I feel like Kevin Hart and LeBron doing the touchdown dance is still kind of funny, and you do not like it. You're over that.
Nah.
Oh, come on. It's kind of funny.
Nah, I like the Campbell one because it's new. It's kind of different, you know?
They run it every single commercial of every game. It's been a thousand times.
I'm going to hate it by next week, but
Progressive,
I like it.
Progressive owns the commercial space. The Progressive dad is the funniest thing on TV. No sitcoms anymore, and now all the comedy writers do insurance ads. But you're right, it is good. Dan Campbell is having a moment, I think. I think everyone's high on Dan Campbell.
Except
if they had
Pete,
lost last night, we would have killed him.
Except for Pete.
I was waiting for a key fourth down last night. I was watching. Waiting. He did go for it one time, but man, if he costs his... You're waiting for that, Maggie. That's your only downside of the
Lions.
I know,
we just have to fast forward to the NFC Championship game when you're leading by three scores.
Yeah, McVay did it last night. McVay had the weird push on fourth down instead of the field goal.
That was weird.
He never goes for it on fourth down. He's very conservative usually, Sean McVay. For being this wunderkind offensive genius, he's pretty conservative dude.
He and the Rams leaving Motown with injury concerns as well, losing two offensive linemen and, most importantly, Puka Nacua, a right knee problem the first half. He did not return. Dak Prescott celebrating that new contract by leading the Cowboys to a 33-17 rout in Cleveland. They only needed a throw for 179 yards and one score. Dak said postgame teammates giving him their wrist sizes, assuming he's buying them watches with that four-year, $240 million deal. All but $9 million is guaranteed. That's a record, as is the $60 million annual average value.
He could buy us all watches.
Like all of us.
All of us.
Like
all
the country?
Of us. Yes.
Everyone gets a Rolex?
America.
Oprah style?
Why did he do this earlier, Bogus? Why didn't he do this 3 weeks ago?
Was he the one not doing it?
I don't know. Why didn't somebody do it 3 weeks ago?
Somebody do something.
Why on earth would you go to the Sunday? I think that Jerry had the deal done, but didn't want to do it because he's the TV guy. He didn't want to do it on Thursday or Friday night. Because it was streaming. I think secretly Jerry did all these streaming deals, and he's like, I want to make it work. I want to make it work, Maggie.
Still not getting any better.
Nope.
Can I tell you guys?
Wait, that was Jerry Jones?
Yeah, no, it was Andrew Bogish. Can I tell you the quick story about? So I lost this bet to Perloff about Dak Prescott's contract. It's done. I'm over. I've got to go sit at the Waffle House for 24 hours. Yep. And for every waffle I eat, I get an hour off the 24. It's going to be brutal. You're going to take me out of there in a wheelbarrow, basically.
I can't wait.
I'm going to be crawling. I'm lucky if I'm not in a body bag. This is going to be a devastating 24 hours.
I'm excited to sit in the booth next to you and just leisurely eat a waffle that I truly enjoy and then leave when I want
to. Then get up and leave. Yeah. Wow, foxhole.
I'm psyched.
Thanks for the support.
Are you as psyched as I am when the bacon's on the side and you get the syrup on the bacon? I love that.
You guys, you want me to leave you alone for a second?
I can't wait.
No, we'll be there. That's going to be a really fun 37 minutes in that Waffle House.
And then tack on another 12 hours for me if I'm lucky.
So set the scene, Maggie. You must have been really upset.
I was when I eventually got the news. So I took my kid to a farm, first pumpkin farm of the season, just me and him. And he wanted to go into this corn maze. And the guy warned me at the front. He's like, it's kind of challenging. So just stay to the right and you should be in good shape. 25 minutes later, my kid's like, I want to get out. I want to get out right now. We're completely lost in the corn maze. We keep going back to the same thing, dead ends. We're going in circles. My kid's starting to freak out. He's five. I'm saying, well, get a donut when you're done. You know, everything to try to keep him calm. I end up having to call the place, the front desk, from the middle of the corn maze. I'm like, hi, I'm stuck in your corn maze with my five-year-old. Can you send somebody to come and get us? They're like, no.
Yeah,
did they believe you right away?
When they're like, where are you? We just said, I'm near the corn. What would you say? How would they know where you are?
Send somebody. Somebody's got to know this thing like the back of their hand. Who made it?
But how do they describe where you are unless they're following like a...
Shout to me. Like, follow the sound of my voice.
Oh, I thought you meant like have a, you know, a Find My app or something. Oh. Yeah.
No, I was going to die in there. It would have been terrible. She's like, look up and you'll see the tree line. Whatever tree line you see, just cut through the corn. So my kid, I have to send him in first. So he's basically, we're bushwhacking through the corn, like not even in the maze. And my kid comes up, he's got all these like cuts and stuff on the sides of his face.
Oh, no.
Because I had to push him in first because he also like, he wanted to go in front because he was, I don't think he was scared. It just
sounds like he was. Yeah. Rightfully so.
I was scared. I thought we were never going to get out. And then it starts to feel like The Shining a little bit.
Sure.
I know that's not a corn maze. It was another type of maze, but I'm like, nobody's in here. It was really weird. And we end up finally getting out, and it was on the complete other side. It was a disaster. And then I find out that Dak Prescott signed. I'm like, crap.
Wow.
Today can't get any
back
worse.
In.
Actually, the Bills were going to lose. I'm like, this is the worst day ever.
Can I share my dream?
If you want to.
Well, okay. Actually, this isn't even to you, because I wanted, it sounds weird, because I had a dream about Maggie and I. That sounds awful. But it was Friday afternoon.
We spent a lot of time together.
Friday afternoon, I had a dream. That
a nap dream.
That
yeah.
Dak Prescott signed, and I was so psyched. I started tearing around the office, screaming, "Maggie's got to eat tacos! Maggie's got to eat tacos!" You were there, Bogus, by the way. And we were like high fiving. And we're like, "Maggie's gonna have to eat so many tacos." So in my dream, the punishment was tacos.
I think you just wanted a taco, probably subconsciously.
We all want tacos.
Always.
But it's a better song than "Maggie's got to eat waffles." It doesn't come off the tongue.
Also, thanks for dancing on my grave, basically, like literally dancing in your dream.
I think I saw right before I fell asleep for my nap, I saw a Clarence Hill tweet that like the deal is getting closer, and that was emblazoned on my subconscious.
Man, if I could change this thing to tacos, it's just, is there a 24-hour taco
I offered you
house?
An out last week. By the way, I offered you an out last week when things started to look dire.
I know. I didn't take it.
Yeah,
I wanted you to eat the omelets.
You couldn't take it, but yeah, there's really no way out of this. I've been doing the math in my head. There's no easy way to finish this bet.
I know, it's the corn maze of show bets.
Didn't Botcher do the math last week? Is it like 16 waffles get you out after 12 hours?
It is. It's the 2 waffles per hour for about 8 hours.
Oof. Well, let me ask, what happens if you eat 6 waffles in the first hour?
You take lose 6 hours, so that's 7 hours. So then you have, that would be 17 hours left.
Wow.
Yeah. So many hours.
It's a lot of hours, a lot of waffles.
It's a lot of waffles. And like, do you speed eat the 2 at the beginning of every hour so you have like the other 50 minutes to digest? And
yeah, so I did get that good advice when I had to eat a whole pizza many, many years ago. It was as much as you can in the first 20 minutes before your brain has caught up to your stomach. And I did find that that was very effective.
And then you threw up all over the studio.
Well, after, but yeah.
Yeah.
What if I throw up at the waffles? Whatever.
Well, they're used
what
to
if?
It.
There's no what if.
When?
Yeah.
When
we're not pro bulimia on this show, but I mean, 24 waffles in 24 hours is...
It's not going to be a choice. Like, I didn't choose to throw up the pizza. It just came out. Good morning, everybody, and happy Monday. So that's going to happen soon.
I can't. I'm just picturing your son with little scratches on his face after diving through the corn row to get to the end of the maze.
At one point, he goes, "Mommy, let's go this way." And I was like, "All right," because every way I had picked was not working. Like, maybe we should just follow a 5-year-old. Maybe he'll get us out of here. But that didn't work. And when I called him, I was like, "I'm stuck in your corn maze." And they said, "Look at the tree line and just cut through." And then it just clicked, like hung up.
They must get this call a lot. Can you come get us? No.
No. Then I went and spent $50 on donuts. So, joke's on me.
Ooh, apple cider donuts?
Yes.
Oh, now we are talking.
I know. They were really good. Bogus, thank you so much. Perloff and I will make our pick for Monday Night Football, Jets 49ers. We'll do that next. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff, reacting to a big week one in the NFL. Got our college football reaction in as well. Shocking upsets in Notre Dame. Michigan got steamrolled by Texas. So much to do. But we have a game tonight that I want to get your take on, Perloff. San Francisco hosting the New York Jets. The line has moved again. So last night when I went to sleep, this line was 3.5. It's now moved to 4. So moving in the direction of San Francisco. You go first, and I'll tell you where I'm leaning from a betting perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. I was so confident in this game on Friday. What happened was more time passed since all the chaos in San Francisco, and you realize it's a Monday night, and maybe they won't be as unsettled as you expect. I still like the Jets in this game with the points because last year they won in the same situation without Aaron Rodgers. I think the Niners are going to be messy. All weekend long, you felt like teams were playing another preseason game in week one, and I kind of expect that vibe from San Francisco's offense, close game.
If you would like to do this on DraftKings, which is what we use, New York Jets, if you take the points and if you parlay that with the under 43, that gets you to, excuse me, plus 254 if you're leaning that direction. I also like Aaron Rodgers to throw two or more passing touchdowns at plus 105. Just a couple of the things we're kind of looking at for today. Anything else?
Yeah, by the way, the Super Bowl hangover thing. I saw a stat. I don't have in front of me, but the team that loses the Super Bowl usually comes out super flat early in the season the next year. There are a lot of reasons to worry about the Niners. Watch them go out and look like the old Niners. But this is such a good opportunity for the Jets because the Jets are going to be in a brutal division race now. I think all three teams are going to be right there.
Okay, so that's a little of what's going on tonight. We're excited about that game. Andrew Bogish is here with us still because it was a story we didn't get to in the update that we wanted to make sure we got to. And specifically, Perloff wanted to make sure we got to this story because what happened this morning?
So he walks into a little bullpen at like 5:52 and goes, Bogus, you just see my email. And he's referencing the link that he sent to the story. And I go, yeah, it's in the rundown too. And he goes, remind me what it was about again. So the question was, did you get my email? Could you tell me what was in it?
Well, it's funny because there were two emails. I was also going to send you that Taylor Swift was upset about the NFL leaking the news that she was going to be at the game, but I couldn't remember which one I said. Because I said, like, I don't know. I said a bunch of things.
I only got that, the one about Terry Bradshaw on Fox pregame.
Right, yesterday. But you have to understand, we are doing a four-hour show. There's all sorts of other content ideas flying around besides that one email to you about Terry Bradshaw's comments.
Wait. But that was the question. You started it with, did you get my email? And the only one I got was about Terry Bradshaw. So then you follow up with what was in it. I don't know. It was pretty startling.
I was thinking about something else. Who cares?
Piggybacking, though. I don't know if we should start to get worried about you. You also made a Heisman pick and then didn't remember it three days later. Are you all right?
We're going to have Perloff do that cognitive test that they wanted Joe Biden to do.
Let's get to the Terry Bradshaw story, though, because this one is really silly.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's no one. I can't find audio of it, but apparently on Fox pregame show yesterday, while saying, while they were previewing the season, he said he hasn't been this excited since his aunt taught him how to play spin the bottle.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Now, before anybody runs to some really weird dreams and nightmares, like, it's come up in my house, like, what spin the bottle is.
Are kids playing that still?
I don't know, but, like, if I explain it to my kids what it is, did I just teach them how to play it? And is that what he meant? Like, now he knew what to do when he was hanging out with his teenage friends, now that he was spinning the bottle with his family members?
I hope that's a generous read. I hope that's the correct read. Terry Bradshaw, it could be anything.
It's on the table, right?
It's definitely on the table. So, are kids still playing Spin the Bottle?
I don't want to know.
We didn't do that when I was a kid.
I definitely played it once or twice. And 7 Minutes in Heaven when you went in the closet with somebody.
I heard about that.
I'm sure you did. Your friend told you about that?
My friend's like, it's crazy in there. I'm like, weird. All right, I'm going home. Yeah, Terry Bradshaw.
You got nothing on this. The story that
this you wanted so to want, talk
wait,
about this.
Demanded in the show.
Your mic's off. You're the one who wanted this in the show.
Oh, you guys think this was an interesting story?
Well, what do you think? Do you think it means that the aunt just explained it to him or that with him?
Nobody knows what it means, but I think it was just funny.
Again. We got it in the show now. We thought maybe you wanted
to.
You emailed it.
Such a stress to get it in the show. Like, this is a me thing. Why are we talking about me and not the story? I felt like the whole story. You just sort of just play the story in one of your updates instead of whatever this was.
You sent it to us, and now you've got no take on it.
Well, that's because you buried the story in the last segment of the thing. I don't even know. You got me confused by the intro to it. Sorry. Wait, Bogus, what's your problem with me? All show, you've been coming after me. Besides, I said something about the Giants. You're like, no, I am the final word on all things Giants. Shut up, Perloff.
Kaplan also said it's a flex, humble brag from Bogus. He has played Spin the Bottle. Thank you to Ryan. Thanks, Nick, EJ, Andrew, and Andrew.